Blog Talk Radio.
Found us again. Fantastic. This is your host, Dale Graham, for another episode of Masonic Companion. It's wonderful to have you here on the 285th day of the year. We have lots to talk about. I'm reminded that not everybody is comfortable with change. And I find that I once would have just endorsed it and said, well, all change is inevitable. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's a simple process. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it ain't. I think it depends on perspective and keeping a healthy perspective, which might be one of the points of Freemasonry. So we're going to talk about things Masonic today. It's an exceptional day. It's what you make of it is, of course. I wanted to talk a little bit of this program I referred to as Gravitas, because today I want to share with you and get your advice on something that I think is fundamental, something that is a responsibility for all of us. But I want to talk to all 3.5 million or 5 million Masons out there on the planet about the fundamental relationship of the apprentice to the craft. And I say that because we've had we've seen that that the work, the meaning of the ancient charges, what a man takes from them, has tended to take a back shelf in the Masonic lexicon. Just like, you know, we don't hear conversations about the landmarks. Right here in this part, in Grand Lodge of Canada, we don't have, in the province of Ontario, sorry, we don't have a defined set of landmarks. It is curious and interesting. It allows us to discover what landmarks are, and each one of us to define the essentials. But I say to you, that if we're not good apprentices, which I tend to think collectively, you say, well, what kind of a grade do you give all 5 million of us? Let's say 5 million. What kind of a grade do you give us? Well, if the sample is accurate, let's say what's going on around me is a litmus test for what's happening in the rest of the world, then I would give us about a C, not about. I would give us a C. And I say that because, first off, we are an aspirational organization. So that means to me that there is always something more that we could be doing. You know, to give us an A would seem to be that we've accomplished. And as you know, we're always in the process of refinement. And it's an ongoing process because of the level of complexity that we have agreed to tackle. It's you can make simple music and you can make sweet music, but some music is sounds so sweet, but it is the product of a great deal of thought. And then, you know, what comes comes to mind is the composer Bach when I think of that. That there's something that does drill into the mind. But help me with this. Raconteur, poet, journalist, lawyer, soldier, teacher. Albert Pike was a man of many facets. His work before the Supreme Court argued the treaty rights of American First Nations and faced down racism and genocide and raw political power with a conviction in the word of law and appearance of justice. He was a man of his times. When Dr. Albert Mackay was desperate for help writing the ritual for Scottish Rite, he turned to Colonel Pike, whose work has been tough for readers to digest because it requires exceptional dissection. It's not for the faint of heart. Morals and Dogma, of course, is that is what he produced and collated, in all fairness. But it wasn't meant to be read as a book. Each section, each particular area is a standalone piece. And it is, to my mind, a book that has a hidden exercise in it. As you read it, and as you know the man, it is very, very difficult for the reader to reconcile. It's very difficult to reconcile because some of the things in it are from a time past about relationships with people. And it's startling. Oh, my goodness. I found myself, like most at the first read, saying this is not the, you know, this is the writings of a man that simply has, you know, contradicts my way of thinking about my fellow man. What's difficult is when I begin to realize who this man was, asking myself why he would do this in writing. And of course, there's a task. And of course, it's not about the harshness and mistreatment of our fellow man. It's this very odd sense of equality, practical equality. Things have changed today. But that's Mackay turned to, that lets us know why Mackay turned to this man, because he was bright and articulate, well read. He says this, and this defines the relationship that I felt with Freemasonry for a long time. It's not, Freemasonry existed as that collection of philosophy, you know, moral and political, a philosophy well before the organizations, well before the bureaucracy. He says, if you have been thus disappointed, our labor has been in vain. Whether these degrees have for you a real value depends upon your capacity to understand them, and upon the amount of study and the degree of reflection you have bestowed upon them. He brings a call for those committed to preserving the landmarks, who have embraced as their own the attitudes of the ancient churches. No one can be compelled to change, yet as Pike reminds us, we take to the grave what we have learned. If we do not share that learning, it is then lost. We should be aware that the deeper lessons, the knowledge of Freemasonry, is at risk if we who are starving for knowledge do not willingly commit to our apprenticeship. No barrier is enough to make us fail. But move forward we will, with respect, as ancients sharing the feast. I say the ancients. That balance point that was necessary so that there would be thoughtful dialogue about the consequence of change, the consequence of modernism, not whether it was going to happen or not, but rather to ensure that we didn't make the mistake of assuming that everything modern, everything in reform was fit and proper. So we see that exercised in grand lodges when we see petitions come forward for a bit of a rewording of ritual or a change in the canons. We then find that we want things consistent with the past. So if the thinking of the past was unsound, then we would risk continuing that on generation by generation without question. What is fortunate is the ability within the fraternity to willingly attend to our scholars and begin to understand if the product of what we have today is suitable and is it an accurate reflection, or has that mirror of history and time become opaque? The ancients represent a mindset for me, a mindset of the importance that tells us about the importance of questioning. Pythagoras and our lessons teach us to control our emotion, not to erase them, but clearly not to necessarily be governed by them. That's complicated. Everything about life is that way, it seems, until we begin to embrace the fundamental principles that linger behind a good life. Then life becomes remarkably easy, as long as we put our faith and trust in a principled, ethical way of going about our business. Now, Freemasons, if we've been busied ourselves, now remember, be fair. This is not fault-finding. To progress, we cannot rest our tools on a table that's giving off such a bad vibe. The bad vibe is that constant gnawing feeling of wrongness. In order to progress, we have to say something is wrong. That's the thinking that's just very, very odd. Why, how would a good man get better? There's nothing wrong with a good man, is there? What would compel us to take something that's good and make it better? We're not saying that something good is wrong, are we? No, we have to break it down into a more primitive instinct so we can have a quarrel or ill will. Then we can justify ourselves. It's funny that we're able to search out ill will even on a very beautiful sunny day in paradise. If you go looking for it, it's there. What that teaches you is that the joy that we feel, the contentment with our life, is a matter of perspective. If you're waiting for everything to be correct and in line with your thinking until you then can express your happiness, you're waiting a very, very long time, my friend. There is no happiness in that. That's fool's gold. A false start. So we have the need to commit ourselves to an apprenticeship and to learn. Now, here's a question that I have. I've noticed that when somebody tries to force learning on me, in other words, when they're sitting down and they are very excited about a particular topic and they think I should know that topic, and they don't take a moment to express or to let me make any choices about that, and they assume that I'm going to be motivated and that I understand the context of what they're saying. You know, it's like anything else. If you take the information and your expertise out of context, it makes no sense. None. The people at the table that are smug about the statistics should probably leave the room for this part. That would be like saying, if all those people that are a bit smug about Pythagorean principles should probably leave the room. Right? Can't handle the fact that you were expected to keep a mouth shut and learn to listen and to keep information secret. Gentlemen, that ship sailed. It's not leaking. We brought these people in knowing full well. We put a room full of people together. Somebody's going to talk about the so-called secrets. We've always known that. What we need is to restore a sense of dignity and reserve, and to be able to bring thoughtful responses to our critics' comments. No matter where, no matter what part of the world. If we continued to follow a flow of wrong-mindedness, then we can generally whip up public sentiment. The public seems to salivate over these witch hunts and is prone to making mistakes, lynching innocent men, expressing the baser needs of men. Accountability. Good Lord, if you can't be accountable to your Creator, what hope is there? You expect the rest of us to have to watch, make sure, watch over your shoulder all the time because you're incapable of doing it for yourself. You have no moral rudder. Well, I've met that man. So have you. So yeah, we need to. Yes, we do need to be vigilant and hold men accountable. But teaching? I think the exchanging the negative vibe, that negative sense, will come from within you, within the man. The Freemasonry has been cloaked in in criticism for a long time. 1826, the Morgan Affair, was it? Yeah. You know, and before that, governments trying to outlaw it. This is not new to craft masonry, nor is it a secret. It's a part of our history that is challenging. So we have to overcome that. It's not to think that the accountability will one day stop. No, and nor should it. I would not want to be part of anything that would even for a moment suggest that it should be unaccountable. Not for a moment. Because we've seen the product of that type of despotism in the world. No, our work is in front of us, to approach our work with some enthusiasm and vigor because we're discovering things about ourselves. Now, if a new apprentice stands next to you and watches you at your laboratory and asks you the question, how did you become interested like this? How do you handle failure when your experiments that you've carefully crafted come up with an answer or a solution or an end product that was not what you expected? Well, of course, that's the whole point, to come up with the unexpected, not to come up with the predicted. That's not an experiment. It's finding. So the Masonic experiment is finding. So today, on our table, we have some tasks in front of us, don't we? We think that the key to the remedy to the friction within the order, to make us better, to improve, it rests within the volumes of the education from the past, starting with the expectations of our behavior found in the ancient charges. I notice that when a student begins to investigate the ancient charges, they start to look at what the words mean, fairly clear. Then you can start to look at the charges as a body of work. Again, an interesting exercise. And then you ask yourself, what does this paragraph say to me as a man, as a person? What does it tell me? It's not lecturing me. It's not saying, Graham, you're doing something wrong. It's saying, when you walk into this cathedral, this is the way we expect each other to act. We aren't loutish, nor are we foolish. When we get together, it's important to conduct ourselves with a degree of dignity. It's really what it's saying. It's not saying walk around with that false sense of piety. Run. If you see those prophets, who was it? That was a writer called Moustakas that did that book. If you see the Buddha on the road, run. Anybody that comes across with that sense of piety is, keep an eye on them. Keep an eye on them. Real people experience real complications, and real people are imperfect. But the charges and the principles of our gentlecraft teach us to resolve our wounded ego. Not to forget, not to act stupid, but to control emotion. Not to be false about it at all, but to be realistic if you want to be a better person. If you don't, your behavior determines that, not your mouth. Your mouth will tell us that you are a good person, you do everything perfect, and you don't have ill will in your body. Except when people don't agree with you. We're all alike. We share a common currency, don't we? Yeah, read it. It's even in the ritual, my goodness. What say you? Do you come here to the Home Companion to be recharged? And if you happen to be more housebound than you used to be, not a problem. Whoever said progress is going to stop? Nobody. Whoever said the voice of Freemasonry and the engagement with others wouldn't be possible? whoever said it was wrong to bring Freemasonry to you? Certainly not when I took time out of my day to sit down with an old boy and talk about things Masonic. It was a gift, exchange of information, exchange of ideas. Wonderful. So we have what? A task in front of us to teach. As you read, as you learn, reading is one way. Listening to somebody else is another. Watching something on a screen is another. There's different ways of learning. Discussion is a good way to learn. So be gentle with yourself if you're thinking, I don't read routinely. Well, that simply you're beginning to realize that there are more ways of learning. And what difference does it make how you learn? I'm trying to figure out quantum computing. Does it matter whether how I learn that? Is that what you're saying? Does it matter how you learn it? Well, we're so ready to criticize our young people with this. Oh, it's terrible the way I think it's offensive and it's certainly anti-Masonic to tell somebody not only what they should be learning, but how they should be learning it. We have no clue of the tools that are available today. So what we're saying, use the old tools. They're good enough. You should always think in your own mind, you add the bracket, good enough for me, not necessarily good enough for you. How a person learns it, does it matter if they picked it up on an educational program on television? Such things didn't exist when I was a boy. So we're saying because they didn't exist, they're useless? Or am I saying because they didn't exist, I'm not familiar with them, but if the outcome is what's desired, you're very fortunate. And knowing that the generations that follow will learn in ways we can't see today. Our Masonic brethren need to be given the same latitude. You learn by having a presentation done that instills ideas and brings forward questions. Perfect way. What better? We are a product of many generations of oral history, but that changed. We rely heavily on some of the sort of irregular exposures of Freemasonry, the things printed by people that couldn't keep a secret. Well, you think if not for them, some things would be lost. In other words, we would be left with the interpretations of what we have today. Not being able to rely on the work so much of something written down as bona fide. Because after all, if it's written down, it must be true, as Taxil proved not to be the case. If it's on the television, it must be true, as Nixon proved was not the case. If it's on the internet, it must be true, as Edward Snowden has taught us, certainly is not the case. Our freedoms are relative to our need for collective security. Yes, we have to protect ourselves. Just like forever, it was boatloads of religious zealots came from Europe and Britain to the new country. They are what they are. Zealots are what they are. No faith really doesn't matter. They're just dangerous. They don't know how to respect others because they're so shallow in their own sense of purpose. They're perfectly fine. Their faith is perfectly fine. They don't need to harm other people to protect. Because nobody can change their faith. Nobody. The neighbors move in with a different way of thinking about the world. It's not going to change their faith. The zealots seem to be a simple bunch, easily provoked. It's a mindset. Negative. Negative vibe. Approach. Go about approaching our work with that sense of satisfaction in mind that you're exploring something very noble. And here, while we may roll up our sleeves and at the end of our work they have to sweep the shop floor, some apprentices were never taught that, and their workspace shows it. It shows a lack of care. It looks cumbersome, and it reflects the worker, doesn't it? So when you approach this work, approach it with the dignity that you think it deserves. Not this stylized, phony crap. But what you think is important to preserve the sense of dignity about the craft. And that changes, I think, with who is around. I need to talk a little bit about history, at least, at the very least. And a little bit more about the ancients, just because of the ancients and moderns. I was really pleased, in a way, to make a discovery about the way that the charges have been handled in our Book of Constitution. So I ask you, does it matter, or does it show an emphasis that the charges went from the very front to the very back? Yeah, I think it does. I think it's unfortunate. There must have been good reasons for it, of course. But I don't understand them all. But it helps, and maybe I'm having that, there's a simple answer. You know, it's as clear as the nose of my face. Well, it isn't. But it's curious. And knocking on doors, I didn't know, truly, that nobody did this. Nobody even thought to encourage the readings and discussions. And yet, nobody seems to be too offended by it when I'm saying these are obligations. And I talked to masters of the lodge, and I think they get it. But to hold them accountable, if they can't do that, am I to do it? Well, the positive vibe is to bring it up, to talk about it. How are you doing with that? What part of it are you working on this month? Are you learning about how we should talk when we're around strangers? How we should greet each other in the presence of strangers? Or how to conduct ourselves after lodge? Or in lodge? And it's about a funny little way of respect. It teaches us our manners. Of course, if you're protecting the chip on your shoulder, you don't have the ability, or you're just plain stupid, not going to have a clue about any of it. And as Pike was so keen to tell us, if you have thus been disappointed, our labor has been in vain. Meaning the efforts of good masons has been in vain. Nothing about you. Whether these degrees have for you a real value depends upon your capacity to understand them. So, It tells us, brethren, that there are times when we're going to find ourselves in the company of men who don't have the capacity and men who do. And to walk around, we will know these men for who and what they are. But that in itself shouldn't detract us, but it needs to make us cautious, because we could easily, a person of some ability and capacity could easily come across as being arrogant, haughty, divisive. So if you learn a new technique for polishing that ashlar, I don't mind if you teach me. My apprenticeship isn't complete. I've wondered if that's what makes some Masons fuel that negative energy, that negative vibe, that in their own mind they're thinking at it, that at a particular age, a particular degree, their work is done. Life is a process. We are always in an incomplete state. Always that tomorrow, always that moment of discovery, of doing things just a little different. Maybe it's using a different tool or different pressure or different timing, a different stone. Maybe there are variations. Anybody ever saying to us that every ashlar is made of the same material? Rough ashlar to polished ashlar? No, I've never read that it's all marble or it's all granite. Nor have I read that it's soapstone or sandstone. I wonder what that means about me. It means a lot that you're out there offering to help me. If your advice. Thank you. Thank you. It's almost, you know, I want to give a shout out, as the kids say, a shout out to a guy named Gord Crutcher. That protocol and etiquette work is just beautiful. It's so practical. It's like I want to have that. I want an app. This is what I want. I want an app, protocol and etiquette app, so that when I'm in a situation, I can punch it in with my keyboard and have an answer. That would be phenomenal. It simply means that I know where the information is, and in the 21st century, I just need to be able to retrieve it. Ask me a question, and I'm inches away from my computer making me brilliant. So, regurgitating information doesn't mean, isn't a measure of smartness, is it? Phones are smarter than me. Computers are smarter than me. Except that they don't feel happiness when they see you. And I do. Let's connect a little bit. Make ourselves a common apprentice again for a moment. And join me in the workshop. We'll look at where we came from. We'll look at life here in this country. My goodness, we're not even 200 years old. We're still in. Are we boys? Are we in the boys? Are we in the early childhood of our existence as a nation, as a Masonic nation? Are we teenagers yet? I don't know. We still don't have a Grand Lodge in the entire country that has a proper Grand Lodge theater. It's fascinating, that one. One day we will. There's no question in my mind. But how long was Masonry around before the Grand Lodge buildings went up in Scotland and England? Hundreds of years. How long have we been around? What? 155? 157 years? just like the distance between our great-grandfathers and us, or our great-great-grandfathers and us. Oh, we haven't exactly been sitting down on the porch, sipping lemonade and looking at the scenery there, boys. Our brethren were scooting. And man, they didn't have a... They weren't sitting down building the city of London when they were building these Grand Lodges and building the organizations and protecting and defining the country. We did. Somebody was up there populating Pembroke, and then somebody else had to build roads, a cart path, and then pave the darn thing and get some citizens in there and provide for their needs and their education, their spiritual connection, their banking, their policing, and the Masonic Lodge on top of it. Oh, well, you know, no big thing. Easy for those to say who were sitting back on, you know, 1,000 years of history, 1,000 years of development. Well, you smug little rascals, try it the way it is here in Canada. You don't have the luxury of sitting back for a thought, well, yeah, we'll get around to building our Masonic Lodge, but we're going to wait for 1,000 years of history before and social development and cultural development in Canada before we do that. No, have at it. And oh, by the way, some really bad things are happening to friends of ours 6,000 miles away. Some idiots are trying to kill them all and force a way of life on them. Really? Hell with that. That doesn't seem right. What can we do to help? The war ended 5 years after armistice for my family. Troops came home, had to be fed. Children needed nutrition in order to grow. My family bellyache about it, that they say, we're not doing it unless we get credit or recognition. Not once. They're Masons. Farmers and fishermen. Everybody forgot. Oh, well, battle's over, put the guns away. Well, those boys and girls didn't forget. They carried the battles and scars with them. My family did what they could on the homeland. Militia protecting the shores, spotting submarines and crap like that right up next to us, keeping an eye on things ready just in case what was going on in Europe visited us on our shores. And then they get up in the morning and tend to the animals and tend to the crops so the people didn't starve. When you think about all those merchant mariners that had to bring it across the ocean. The people hungry on the other shores. The troops starving on the other shores. And yet we did it. And we built a nation. Imperfect, but we built a nation. We put a government in. Far from perfect, but we're getting at it. Don't you worry. We're Canadians. We're trying to balance the books and not ruin the land. We're not a country that takes kindly to that, as some recent governments are finding out. And we built an exceptional foundation of Masonic thought on the shoulders of the old boys. And it seems harsh to ask them to anticipate the changes that would come in the 21st century. 2060, the balance of the people in the face of the earth will be living in cities. That's not changed. It's always been a migration from rural to urban, rural to city. Urban is something else that sort of sprung up. A latter-day sort of phenomena. But we don't need as many people to do the harsh labor in the fields. Get off your high horse if you think that this is all bad and it's a shame. You ever been out lifting bales all day? And the next day and the next day? Get over yourself. Take your photo op and stuff it. It's hard. You don't do it because somebody makes you. You don't do it because some poncy ass is sitting there watching you do it. You do it because it needs to be done. Yeah? Canadian Masons, needs to be done. It's what gives me great, great respect and a conviction that what we're doing now about education will be done. Yeah, we needed to build universities, so we did. We needed to build colleges, so we did that. We needed to build schools, so we did that. We needed to examine our education, our policies, and our approach to education, so we did that. We built factories. We built laboratories. We built newspapers. We're builders. We tinker all the time. That's the greatness of the country. And my goodness, don't for a minute think that we're so different. We are similar right across this, coast to coast to coast. But we're very, very distinct and proud of it. Maritimer, Quebecer, Quebecois, people here from the heartland in Ontario, the Prairie Westerners or the West Coast or the Arctic, Yellowknife, distinct, proud, committed people. And yes, in spite of all that, anybody could sit back with defined borders going on around them. Well, we didn't have the luxury there, boys. And I think we did pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. And thanks to all the guys that helped us get where we are today. Whatever part, large or small, they performed. Now those first lodges are starting to fall apart. They're not being used as much. There's no pride of ownership in them because they've served their purpose. The way life is changing, and we're looking at it as if we have this strong Canadian sense of commitment. Well, we're not going to let that close. We'll keep those doors open, even if the stairways are dangerous and the doors are falling off the hinges. But by God, we're going to keep that. Well, boys, history has taken us to another level. If the place isn't safe, we need to close the door and move on. And yeah, we need to always remember that we're leaving something really cool. We're bringing forward our memories. Nobody takes that away from us. You see the desperation of areas where men are clinging. It's sad. It's as if they're fighting the passing of time. Really? Think you're going to win? Here. Sometimes we talk about history of Freemasonry here in Ontario, and when I finish the show, I always think, well, my goodness, I want to speak more generally so that the fellows off the English coast may tune in, and the fellows in New Zealand may tune in, and the fellows in Kenya will tune in, and India. But I never quite get around to it, do I? Because our work here in Ontario isn't done. But I will. We'll get around to all those others. You're not forgotten. And our principles are not a predominant set of principles. They're reflections and interpretations of Freemasonry in our land. Entirely recognizable by the likes of anybody who could give the proper signs and come through the door. Wish that we could just hunker down and make this just an open book. Sorry. Yeah, have to be obligated to be part of what this is. Somebody was trying to tell me that keep education for a watch. I'm sorry. History tells us what to do with that kind of malarkey. You know, education is only defined. It only happens when you step on your right foot with your finger up your rear end. There, that's it. It made me laugh when I heard that. You know, those discussions, they can only take place in where I say so. Really? Well, I'm here's a surprise. That ship has sailed. This damn internet and these smartphones and Skype, we're connected. And this rhetoric about, oh, I can't do that, well, it makes you sound really foolish these days. Move on. You've got how many, what do you have, about 16 computers in your car these days? You don't seem to be grousing about the computer that applies your brakes or the one that takes care of the carburation or fuel injection, excuse me. So this notion about good and bad, well, there's a good vibe and we're using it and we're having a good time. So step aside here and let's get into a little bit of history. If somebody tells you, this is the forum where we can learn and the rest of the time you're blowing smoke, well, be gentle with them. Don't be grumpy. Don't let that negative energy. My friend, a good friend, Mike, would bring that forward. I'm pretty darn sure. You know, he's aware of this gestalt. He's aware of that energy. What it does to people and their thinking. It's beautiful when you're in the presence of people like that. It just fills you. Something is difficult, so what? That's Canada. Something is impossible, so what? We'll get to it. It's only impossible till we get to it. And we'll bang away until it's fixed. Canadian thing to do. And all that grousing and complaining and whining, well, that's another country. We know who they are, but we're too polite to say anything about it. And when we're done taking on all the crap jobs, it's more like in this country, you don't have to do that. But somebody else will step up and say, you know, I'll do that. You don't have to. And then somebody else will come up and say, no, go sit down, old boy. You can't do that. I'll take that crap job and I'll do it. And then there's some young whippersnapper that wants to fit in and says, no, y'all sit down. You've done your share. It's my turn. Crap job. Not in this country. It's just work to be done. And nobody shrugs it. Masons don't. Good masons don't. Nobody shrugs their work because they know somebody else has to do it. So you're just passing it on, passing the buck to some guy. We don't like doing that. We like helping each other. And as my grandfather would say, Jesus, Joseph, and Mary, if you need a hand, that fella's always there. That was Cyril's way of cursing. You know, if you need a hand, he's always there. It's Mason. That's what you fellows are. That's what we are to each other. And we need each other right now. Help, help. We're having the bloody country's a bit odd, isn't it? And it starts, don't blame me, it starts over on the East Coast. You ever go in and try and have a serious conversation with somebody from Newfoundland or from the island where I'm from? It's just not going to, the first impression of this country is a little rough weather. Well, let's move on. That'll eventually stop until it starts again. We're a bit daft. It's cold. Really, it's winter. Hadn't noticed the things freeze. Gee, I appreciate you bringing it up. Gee, do you think we should get a shovel and dig that driveway out or that sidewalk? Jesus, really? You're just brilliant. You must be from Ontario. I'm loving this. That's the vibe. That's a Masonic vibe. You want to whine? Get the children out of the room, you little whiners. Go on over there. Can't handle it. All grumpy. Come on over there. Change your depends and get the hell out of the room. Leave it to people to handle it. it's my turn to do some of the heavy lifting. Let me try and earn my keep here today. I want to talk about a little bit about, you know, the bloody hell. Well, I'm just reading the history of the country, and so much of it is bogged down in the most boring, dry nonsense. It's either military or political, you know, the bureaucracy of military, as if nothing else was going on. Well, a little flash, everything else was going on, and these are just very narrow, poorly written, usually, histories. And thank goodness that we have more contemporary writers that are digging out all the facts that were missed the first go around and making our history what it truly is. It's fascinating. Fascinating. So, oh, well, you know, let's all arm up and shoot at each other. Well, we don't do that in this country. You're not going to see East Coast and West Coast. Quebec, you got a right. You got a point. Yeah, you're cool. Yeah, absolutely. You helped define us. And this friendship that's been sometimes a little rocky, sometimes we haven't been as respectful, sometimes you haven't been as respectful. Well, at the end of the day, it's pretty damn good. Pretty damn great. Here, help me with this. If this is talking about, do you mind if I talk to you about something a bit serious for a change? Please, jeez, you know? This only happens because you get me started. A few years later, war broke out. Later than what? Just after. We were talking about around the period of the Lodge meeting in the Barton Lodge. Remember that? And the developments around Hamilton, meetings held around the from 1796. Remember, we were talking about that last week in 1800, early times. Let it not be forgotten that a large majority of the members of the Barton Lodge at the time were men who had fought on the Royalist side in the War of the Revolution, and that they had lost their property and had been exiled from the place of their birth because of the part they had taken. Notwithstanding which, they could rise above the passions of the conflict and resentment at what they must believe to be injustice and spoliation, and could remember as Masons the brother who was so eminently worthy of honor. Hear, hear. A few years later, war broke out between Great Britain, the United States, and Upper Canada. It was several times raided by the forces of the Republic. Well, we're not going to remind the members of the Republic that it was us that kicked their ass and burned their white house. Well, no, that would be impolite, is it? Best I just politely take that one back to the hockey rink. Members of the Barton did their share of work in the several battles that took place along the Niagara frontier and further west. Good boys. In 1813, a strong force under Generals Winder and Chandler advanced from Niagara against the British General Vincent, who was entrenched at Burlington Heights in the western part of what is now Hamilton. Ephraim Land, a brother of that Robert Land of whom mention has been made, fearing that the property of the lodge would be carried off or destroyed by the invaders, took the warrant, the jewels, and other portable articles and buried them in his flower garden, planting a branch of geranium over them to mark the spot. The precaution, however, was not necessary. After the Battle of Stony Creek, the United States fell back, and Brother Land dug up the articles so carefully interred. They were not again used for many years. When the war closed, the membership of the Barton Lodge was sadly reduced. William Jarvis, the provincial Grand Master, had for many years ceased to be active in Masonry, and he died shortly afterwards in 1817. Ah, I wonder if he's like the sort of the old fossils that come to lodge to get a 50-year pin that I haven't seen the inside of a lodge for 30 or 40 years. Besides, the warrant of the lodge had been issued under authority of the so-called Ancient or Athol Grand Lodge of England. Here, pay attention, boys. That body had in 1813 united with the original Grand Lodge to form the United Grand Lodge of England, and the brethren of the Barton were in doubt as to their Masonic standing. And so for about 20 years, there was no meeting of the lodge. By the year 1835, Hamilton had grown to be a considerable village. Among its inhabitants were several unaffiliated Masons. These and a few of the survivors of the original members of the Bard met and resolved to attempt a revival of the lodge. In the end, they were successful. The United Grand Lodge of England issued a new warrant numbered 733 on the English register, and under that warrant, the Barton worked until the formation of the Grand Lodge of Canada in 1855. 1855? Oh, surely to goodness, we mean 1655. Surely to goodness, if we're going to poke holes in everything that's going on Masonic, we've been around for hundreds of... No, we haven't been around for hundreds of years. Give us a bit of a break. We'll get to it. 1855. Excellent. Hamilton was still a village. Well, excuse me, if we're not tinkering with everything Masonic, that the learning was going on outside the lodge. We had a town, a city, a province, and a country to build. Well, what are you, nuts? You can't build everything all at once. You're just running around frantic all the time. And by the way, we need to put in sewage systems and water. We need to make sure everything's healthy. We need somebody to keep an eye on and run all these things. Pumping stations, train systems. Regulate our merchants. And keep an eye on the border so those nitwits don't try and come. Who are we going to talk? One day we're going to talk. You're going to talk about something that will give you a good, you know, serious on one side and a hell of a good laugh on the other. We'll talk about the Fenian raids. Just where in the hell? You're going to trade Canada for what? Really? Jeez. You guys have been dropped in your heads far too much. Jesus. Okay. Back to the real world here, huh? We know that the body had in 1813 united with the original Grand Lodge to form the United Grand Lodge. That's the ancients, yeah? These and a few survivors of the original members of the Barton met and resolved to attempt a revival of the lodge, and in the end they were successful. Cheers. The United Grand Lodge of England issued a new warrant numbered 733. One of the men who took a leading part in the reorganization was William Johnson Kerr. He was a son-in-law of Joseph Brant, the great Mohawk chief, and a relative of Sir William Johnson, so prominent in New York during and before the War of the Revolution. Brother Kerr was in command of the Indians who won the Battle of Beaver Dams. He and his family are buried in the cemetery of the Little English Church at Burlington. A few years ago, the members of the Barton Lodge placed a memorial stone at the head of his grave. In November 1895, the Barton Lodge celebrated its centennial. A gold medal was struck to commemorate the event, and Grand Lodge granted the members of the Barton permission to wear this medal as a Masonic jewel. I love that. Right Worshipful Brother George Bennett was sufficiently told the history of the Provincial Grand Lodge of Upper Canada. I may be permitted, however, to add a few facts. In 1884, the body was without an executive head, and a proposal was made to petition the Grand Lodge of England to appoint Right Worshipful Brother Thomas Gibbs Rideout of St. Andrew's Lodge, Toronto, to the vacant position. Then, in a very dramatic manner, Sir Alan McNab of the Barton Lodge appeared on the scene and produced a patent appointing him to the place. Sir Alan was not an exemplary Mason. A resident of Hamilton, he went down to Toronto and was initiated in St. Andrew's Lodge. The Barton Lodge protested against the invasion of its territory, and Sir Alan received his second degree in Hamilton. Soon afterward, he visited Scotland, and while he was there, he was made Provincial Grand Master for Upper and Lower Canada. He was not even a Master Mason at the time, and there were no Scotch lodges in Upper Canada. There is no evidence that Sir Alan ever attempted to act upon his Scotch patent. I think he made Scots. After he was made Provincial Grand Master for Upper Canada by the Grand Lodge of England, he took but little interest in Masonic affairs. Oh, a dress-up Mason? Really, McNabb? I'm shocked. He took little interest in Masonic affairs, leaving routine work to his lieutenant, Brother Rideout, who generally presided at the meetings of the Provincial Grand Lodge. A great deal of dissatisfaction existed, not only at the carelessness and neglect shown by officials of the Grand Lodge in England, but because there was, to some extent, a clashing of interest between the lodges of England and Irish origin. The latter had no provincial organization, and the brethren of those lodges were also dissatisfied with the want of attention paid to their communications by the home brethren. The first open protest against the state of things came from the Barton Lodge. On the 10th of December, 1851, it was resolved that a committee be appointed to confer with Strict Observance Lodge concerning the propriety of addressing the various sister lodges in Canada on the subject of withdrawing from the Grand Lodge of England and establishing an independent Grand Lodge of Canada. The brethren of the Lodge of Strict Observance declined to take part in the movement, but the matter was brought before the Provincial Grand Lodge at its next ensuing meeting in June 1852, when notice of motion was given that at the following communication, a resolution would be introduced to petition the Grand Lodge of England to be permitted to exercise sole control over the affairs of Masonry in this province, and that the Grand Lodge of England be Masonically requested to use its influence with the Grand Lodge of Ireland to induce those lodges now work under its authority to submit to the decision of this Grand Lodge. At the next semi-annual meeting, the resolution was duly moved and carried. It affirmed the feelings of respect and reverence for the Grand Lodge of England were entertained by the Canadian brethren, but added that it is absolutely necessary for the welfare of Masonry that a separate Grand Lodge be established with full power to control the working and operations of the craft in this quarter of the globe, to secure which a committee be appointed to draft a petition to the Grand Lodge of England based on the foregoing resolutions, praying for permission to establish a Grand Lodge in that part of the province of Canada formerly constituting Upper Canada, with full power and authority to manage and control all matters connected with such Grand Lodge, and all lodges now working under the constitution of the Grand Lodge of England, and that the said committee be fully empowered to carry on all correspondence with the Grand Lodge of England for the purpose of securing the absolute independence of such Grand Lodge. For the next 3 years, letters and memorials were sent to England pointing out the disadvantages under which Canadian Masons were suffering, but these were not even answered. The subject was before the Provincial Grand Lodge at every session, but no final action was taken. While all this was going on, the Brethren of Lodges chartered by the Grand Lodge of Ireland were suffering similar neglect and expressing like dissatisfaction. It must be remembered that the Irish lodges, 10 in number, had no provincial or local organization and could make representations to their mother Grand Lodge only as individual lodges or by convention specially called for the purpose. The first formal action, as far as it is known, was taken by King Solomon's Lodge, Toronto, on the 10th of November, 1853, when a resolution was adopted appointing a committee to correspond with other lodges holding under the Grand Lodge of Ireland for the purpose of establishing a ruling power in Canada West. The committee performed the work assigned, and on the 8th of December, 1853, that same year, the convention was held at Hamilton. Four lodges were represented. In May, 1854, another convention was held at London, which appointed a committee to draft a constitution for the Grand Lodge of Canada West. and adjourned to meet at Hamilton in October. This meeting was again adjourned to November at Toronto when a proposal from the Grand Lodge of Ireland to grant a provincial Grand Lodge to the Irish lodges in Canada was discussed. The Grand Lodge of Ireland was not willing to grant to the Irish Provincial Grand Lodge the powers demanded, and in May of 1855, King Solomon's Lodge instructed its representatives to unite with the English lodges for the purpose of petitioning the Grand Lodges of England, Ireland, and Scotland to grant an independent Grand Lodge for the province of Canada West. Negotiations between the Irish lodges and the Grand Lodge of Ireland then ceased. At the regular meeting of the Provincial Grand Lodge English held in May of 1855, it was resolved to summon a lodge of emergency to be held as early in July as possible, quote, for the purpose of taking into consideration the motion to be proposed by the mover of this resolution, and the Grand Secretary was instructed to forward a copy of the resolution to each lodge in the jurisdiction. A lodge of emergency was held at the Clifton House, Niagara Falls, on the 19th and 20th of July, and the minutes inform us. It was duly moved and seconded that a meeting of the delegates from all the lodges in the province under all jurisdictions be invited to meet at an early day to take the necessary steps for communicating with the Grand Lodge of Great Britain and Ireland for the purpose of forming an independent Grand Lodge. The motion being put to the vote was lost. That, however, did not end the business. When the Grand Lodge adjourned on the 19th, a number of the delegates met in convention with several representatives of Irish lodges, and it was resolved that a convention of delegates be held at Hamilton on the second Wednesday in October next for the purpose of considering the expediency of establishing an independent Grand Lodge of Canada, and to proceed with such matters as may be deemed most desirable for the benefit of Masonry in this province. The convention assembled in the room of the Barton Lodge on the 10th of October. 41 lodges were represented, of which 30 held English warrants, 9 Irish warrants, and 2 Scotch warrants. At that convention, the Grand Lodge of Canada was formed. At an adjourned meeting held on the 2nd of November, the Grand Lodge was formally constituted and consecrated, and its officers installed and invested by Most Worshipable Brother H.T. Bacchus, Grand Master of Masons in the state of Michigan. It may not be out of place to tell here why the Grand Lodge of Canada and Ontario retains its present title when its jurisdiction is confined to the province of Ontario, and when there are 8 other Grand Lodges in the Dominion of Canada. In 1855, when the Grand Lodge was formed, it exercised jurisdiction over the whole of Canada as it then existed, that is, the present provinces of Ontario and Quebec. 12 years later, in 1867, the Dominion of Canada was formed by the union of all the old provinces, and shortly afterwards, the territories of the Hudson Bay Company were acquired by purchase, and the province of British Columbia acceded to the Dominion, so that Canada extended from the Atlantic to the Pacific and from the United States border to the Arctic Ocean. About the same time, the lodges in Quebec, adopting the American doctrine of territorial jurisdiction, formed the Grand Lodge of Quebec. It was not at once acknowledged by the existing Grand Lodge, but controversy extended over several years. This was ended in 1874 by recognition of the new body. Then, it may seem it would be easy and proper to adopt the title of Grand Lodge of Ontario, and nobody would have been any happier than the Brethren of Ontario to take the name. But there were lions in the path. While the controversy with Quebec was in progress, some brethren having or believing they had a grievance established a clandestine body and took the territorial name. Not only so, but some colored people formed lodges, established a grand lodge of their own, and assumed the same title. Not only did they take the title, but they obtained an act of incorporation from the legislature and thus fortified themselves with legal warrant. It is possible that if the legitimate Grand Lodge in this province were to assume the same name now, its right to do so might be challenged by the colored people. And in any case, it would not be pleasant for one to be asked to which Grand Lodge of Ontario be owed allegiance. Now, I'll just stop to apologize to all my black friends. This is a history that are going through from a very, very long time ago. So, be challenged by black Masons, our brothers, my brother. To which Grand Lodge of Ontario he owed alliance? The clandestine Grand Lodge, the colored Grand Lodge, or the regular and legitimate Grand Lodge? For these reasons, the best course was pursued. The body calls itself the Grand Lodge of Canada in the province of Ontario. And that's how we came to be. Amazing. Boring? I don't think so. Typically Canadian? Of course. Do we talk about it? Hell no. Get with the program. It's fantastic. People cared enough about these things to make it work. And we're very fortunate. And have we resolved every problem that there ever was? Well, give us enough beverage and a place for us to sit down. I'm pretty darn sure we'll solve all the problems of the world. But it's my time to go. I hope I've made a contribution to your Masonic learning. And I'll leave you with a little bit of music as we sign off. I hope you're doing well. You can see that we're just close to, we're just past one of the historic times, important times in the history of Grand Lodge of Canada in the province of Ontario, October 10th. We're really that new. Anyway, in the meantime, please do walk through life remembering that you have the great architect of the universe on your shoulder, got your back. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, and I look forward to seeing you next week. It's little Stephen Grappelli and Django Reinhardt from 1937. Just because. See ya. Thank you.
mug and boom. We the mug and boom. I the mug and boom. I have the mug and boom. We is the mug and bang. Bang, bang, bang. I have the mug and boom. Bebop, 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 bebop. Nobody knows how it started. Somebody blew it through a horn. Somebody played it on the fiddle. Somebody sang it and a song was born. Now it's a craze, a new sensation. It's the song the bands all swing. Now it's the phrase that rocks the nation. Don't try to stop me cause I'm gonna sing. I's the mug and boom. We's the mug and bang. I's the mug and boom. Boo-bop-dee-bop, boo-bop-dee-ho. Everybody's muggle, that old mug, 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 the mug.